Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
Make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course you didn't. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Internet. One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep. What in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
Well, looking back, it seems like they were awfully concerned with how many women he was getting killed, more so than the fact that he was basically uncovering the Illuminati, so we came together as part two of the Bond binge here at Hollow Nine's What Am I Watching? To talk about the questionable Quantum of Solace. I'm David Clone, as always, your host, and joining me tonight on the panel is Gomez, not Adams.
Blue!
And guests from our past, from our stomping grounds of old, from the whack, where all this creativity hails from. Joining us tonight is Ahmed. Ahmed, say hi to the crowd. I don't know if you have a stage name you want to throw out there, or if you want me to use your full name. We just kind of go with the flow around here.
Yeah, no, this is good. Let's face it, if anyone wants to be found right now, stage names aren't going to help. So, thank you, Dave and Maddie the Gomes Gomez for having me on.
And so I understand you are an aficionado of sorts of the James Bond franchise of Mr. 007. Tell us a little bit about, like, what was your first Bond? How did you get to become a Bond fan? When did you become carrying the 007 card?
Sure, yeah. I think, like, most guys, certainly our age or our generation, have always loved everything Bond. My first Bond film that I saw as it came out when I was sort of old enough to remember was Roger Moore's now I'm blanking, A View to a Kill.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah. That was my first.
And Duran Duran's song.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in the 80s like we all did, and for me growing up in Pakistan where everything Bond and 80s music was super popular, that's what got me started. And then I just never turned back, got into the Sean Connery stuff, and took it forward to present day.
Nice, nice. And Gomez, since we didn't have you with us last time, why don't you give us a quick filler in? Because, I mean, Ahmed and I share the first Bond movie. That was my first one as well.
Oh,
welcome to the club.
I'm pretty sure View to a Kill was my first Bond as
no
well.
No shit! Hat trick!
Oh, look at that!
Hat trick!
Obviously, it was seen in the theaters. Not seen in the theaters. Like, it was seen on, like, TV, on, like, yeah. WPIX or probably.
Or VHS,
That was probably also my first experience with Christopher Walken.
Oh, yeah.
Quite possibly.
And Grace Jones.
And Grace Jones, yes. I mean, you can't get much more iconic than that. But I was a huge fan. I remember when Daniel Craig was first being announced as the new Bond, and there was a lot of doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is who you're going to go with for Bond? I'm like, have you seen Layer Cake?
Yeah.
Layer Cake? Because that is what convinced me that this guy can pull off Bond.
And, you know, we saw
that old sociopath that I think that, especially if you go back to, like, the original source material, the Ian Fleming stories, Bond is a psychopath.
Yeah.
He is not somebody that you want to ever really have in your life unless you have him on your side to go kill people.
And a great take on that, actually, as a slight tangent. I don't know if you guys know anything about rabbit holes. I hate to get into one here, but you
mentioned, we're fans of rabbit holes around here.
You mentioned, you know, Gomez mentioned the Bond sociopathy, and there's a movie with Pierce Brosnan while he was doing Bond, or right after he stopped doing Bond. A John le Carré novel turned into a movie, Tailor of Panama. And with Jeffrey Rush and Jamie Lee Curtis. And for those of you who haven't seen it or those who want to check it out, Pierce Brosnan's character in that movie and the book is basically what Ian Fleming wanted James Bond to be. This womanizing, hard-drinking MI6 operative who just manipulates people, kills people, sleeps with whoever he wants, is a dick. Mm-hmm. And, but is doing it for queen and country.
I feel like
some of the earlier Bond ones with Roger Moore especially lost some of that edge, and Daniel Craig brought that edge back.
Well, when you read the first James Bond story, which is Casino Royale, and there's a line in there that's like the sweet tang of rape. And you read that like, what the fuck?
This is the guy who keeps saving the world? Why does this fucker keep saving the world? Oh, because then there will be no more chicks to rape. I gotcha.
No,
he and Ann Coulter hang out a lot, I guess. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
So that's like, she's basically, that was her call. Like, that was her bat signal for a James Bond type to come and take her away from all of her misery. And exactly. I'm like, no, still no. Still no.
No, as liberal and politically correct as I think I am or want to be, and as much of a hippie liberal leftist I am, I still think the misogyny in the Bond movies or in the writing, as you said, Gomez, the earlier ones, the original works of Ian Fleming, there's some stuff in there where you're just like, that's not acceptable in any time. And
let's not talk about the time that Ian Fleming decided to try to write Bond in Harlem.
Oh, yes. Wow.
Right.
If you want to just go for cheap knockoff blaxploitation, it does not, you can't do much worse than that.
I almost feel like I want them to make that right now. After I'm hearing, I'm like, wait a minute, what?
What you want is James Bond to meet up with Luke Cage.
Yeah.
and watch that last for about a whole 30 seconds.
Holy shit. The possibilities, man. The possibilities.
The very first Roger Moore movie was Live and Let Die.
Mm-hmm.
Paul McCartney and Wings did the song for that. But that was set partially in Harlem with Caribbean voodoo theme running throughout and a lot of jive turkey being thrown there.
It was pretty awful. Yeah,
it was pretty awful. Absolutely.
But I think for the time that was made, I mean, like the X-Files did an episode like that. You know, like I feel like there were these sort of formulas that every show eventually got the packet from Home Office. It was like, all right, it's time to do these, and it's like, okay, here's the rape episode, here's the slightly off-color culture clash episode, as it might have been called, Operation Culture Clash, Operation...
Hey, we're gonna get a couple of Midwest white boys to try to write this.
Exactly.
Because then there'll be a writer's strike. This is also, I think, a cautionary tale about Quantum of Solace is, don't let Scabs right, man. They can't do it. There's a reason the people who are writing this stuff get to be the people who are writing this stuff.
It wasn't just that it was a scab writing. It was that it was running into the deadline for the
writer's strike. Paul Haggis has said that he actually, and I don't know if this is true, but he said right after Quantum of Solace was officially released, he said, I wrote it the day that the strike happened, and I got it in before the strike
Barely. Wow.
Which means he also didn't have time to really do redrafts or work with the actors and directors as they were going through it.
Yeah, and I remember
Daniel Craig and Mark Forster, I think, were essentially hammering out details.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, that strike, they couldn't even do, like, on-set rewrites, right? Mm-hmm. It was sort of like, look, you just make whatever you got in hand.
Correct.
It
ended up being a direct sequel.
Well,
that was not the original plan.
I think that was probably the most genius part of the whole thing. I felt like when I was watching it, both times I was watching it now, I saw this in the theaters on a date. Maybe the date, and the date definitely was not going well. And so I'm thinking that could have maybe tainted that first viewing a little bit as well. Because I remember leaving the theater going, all right, that fucking sucked. And I am done now. I'm done with the Bonds. I was kind of done during the Pierce Brosnan phase that I dropped out, and I was kind of like, they sort of just lost that edge they had for me, that the magic is gone, these are getting stupid. And then Casino Royale kind of brought it back, and so Quantum, I was like, and nope, we're fucking done again with this guy. So
I think it also might have been that choice of language you used on the date to tell her that we're fucked and done, never again. I'm done with this, over, oh my god, what did I get myself into? Maybe that had something to do with the dead ending. I don't know.
The look of horror, and I'm just like, yeah, the directing in this one sucked. And I did mistakenly credit the directing with this one to Paul Greengrass last episode, because I was like, there was all of a sudden this thing where the camera never fucking stops moving, and you can't see shit going on. And in the first movie, and it is the same director, right? Didn't Mark Forster did the first movie as well, or... Let's see.
So. I think the first
Casino. I mean, Casino Royale.
Casino and this.
Yeah,
one,
he did.
Let's see. No, he didn't. Martin Campbell.
Oh, okay.
Which? Yeah no, man. Okay. He kicked ass.
Came after the fact, but he also did World War Z.
Who? Forrester or Martin?
Mark Forrester. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else did Martin?
But this was, I think, a lot of. Part of me, when I saw this, was like, so basically they took the Jason Bourne and said, hey, wow, we really like that jitter cam. We should do more of that.
Well, the thing is, go ahead, Dave. No, well, that Paul Greengrass is the one who ruined the Bournes with that shaky cam shit. I go to, like, whenever both of these series come up, I'm like, first movie, fucking solid. Doug Liman in the first Jason Bourne movie, and Martin Campbell in Casino Royale. It was classic filmmaking. The camera was at the right spot and stayed still, and you saw the guys do all the crazy arm work and the flipping and just grabbing stuff from all around and it becoming a weapon. It wasn't like, shake the camera so you can't really see what's going on, and all of a sudden the good guy's on top and the bad guy's on the ground. And
exactly.
I'm like,
And I think in the final two Craig ones, though, if we're going to stick, you know, sort of within this modern generation of camera work and filmmaking, the last two Craig ones, they did get it right a little bit where they tried to strike a balance, especially some of the, you know, with the action scenes and the fight scenes. But this one, I completely agree. This Quantum Solace only added to what I think the three of us agree, and perhaps a lot of people agree, was the weakest, to put it mildly, of the Craig portion of the franchise.
Very much so.
It was almost like we have to throw one mission in there that kind of bridges between all this mythology revelation stuff. Because as much as that is an afterthought, as we're discussing here for this movie, I felt like that felt, to me, watching it now, like the only thing that was planned. And that they came up with this quantum bullshit.
And it's funny that you mentioned it earlier about the sequel, and then Gomez, you were saying that that wasn't the original plan, which is absolutely right. But when the movie started, I, like Dave, saw it in the theater. I think I left work an hour early the day it came out because the girlfriend I was dating, I had already broken up with her about a different movie. So, you know, that's a whole other story.
It's always a movie. It's always a movie that shows the true reality of what's going on.
We can talk about that on the Valentine's Day podcast.
There you go.
Here's the thing. The success to a long-lasting relationship is knowing, going into it, that you have different tastes in things.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
But see, the problem is I go into it thinking that, but she realizes very quickly part of her different tastes are not liking me. So, you know, that's where problems arise. But getting back to Daniel Craig and James Bond, who, as my understanding is, also has a lot of trouble getting women.
And keeping them alive.
That's what my mom tells me. But, you know, exactly what Dave is saying about the mythology portion, I love that, actually, about this movie. It starts with that car chase that he's got, who is it?
Mr. White. Yeah.
Yeah, in the trunk of the car, and he's questioning him about the last, it's picking up where Casino Royale left off.
Yeah.
The movie ends also with the ode to Vesper Lynd and Bond moving on with his life, supposedly, which is great, but everything in the middle, the whole sort of going to the Caribbean, going to Haiti and then to Central South America, to Bolivia, La Paz, you know, that it was such a convoluted storyline that, coupled with the ridiculous action scenes with the shaky cam, that I think they really lost it. And that's what made it the weakest out of the four, that the first one was fantastic.
Yeah.
The next two, particularly Skyfall, probably the best of the lot of Craig's. And this one just wasn't able to live up to them in any way.
It even the, you know how like usually the song is also a big deal of each Bond movie, the opening song. This is great. I actually did like the song, but they don't even, usually they always reprise it as soon as the end of the movie. Like in Casino Royale, you're hearing that Chris Cornell song again at the credits. This one, they're like, nah, we're just going to throw some EDM on there. we're going to jam you out of here. We hope you got some Molly with you to forget what you just happened. We're not even sure. We're not even sure why we did this. It was sort of like I remembered the trailer as I was watching this, because there were moments where I'm like, see, yeah, I remember watching the trailer thinking this was going to be fucking awesome. And it was because all the trailer featured the mythology shit. You knew he was still going after them for Vesper's death. And you had M in the trailer saying, like, you know, can I trust you even though I can't blame you for wanting revenge for someone you loved. And then you even had the scene with Felix Leiter saying something to him about, like, you know, are you over that shit yet? And you're like, dude, he is carrying the story from the last movie into this one. As soon as the idea of a Bond franchise with a continuity that was going to be like a driving force, because that's what leads them to finding all about Green and Quantum, right? Was
correct.
Was chasing White, and the fact that he basically, they scratched the surface of the Illuminati is kind of how it looked, you know?
Absolutely. And Dave, this is another reason you got to get on the next two, because in the most recent, perhaps final Craig one, we don't know. What is this? The most recent one,
Spectre.
Spectre. Yeah. Sorry. Thanks, guys. There are throwbacks to Quantum and to Casino Royale.
Yeah.
Specific moments that you're like, holy shit. Okay, so we could have done without Quantum if you were going to do this anyway.
Really?
Without giving anything away to the listeners anyone who hasn't seen it, but those references are there. And like you're saying, Dave, the mythology part makes so much sense. Also, quickly, when you mentioned the music, the song for this one, I agree, was a good song. I mean, you've got Jack White of the White Stripes and Alicia Keys doing it. And they themselves on different interviews have said or had said in the past that we wanted to work on this for a very long time and we loved the idea of the Bond movie, which is great. But at the very end of Casino Royale is the first time in that entire movie in Casino Royale you hear the Bond theme.
The original
Bond theme. Yep. And that's a great thing because that's when he becomes Bond.
Yeah.
In the beginning, he's not Bond. He doesn't have his 00. He might get revoked, etc.
Yeah.
And that's when he becomes Bond. So that also leaves you wanting a lot from the next movie.
Yeah.
Solace. Because you're like, man, that ended so perfectly. I can't wait to see how they're going to go with this. And then you're left pretty disappointed.
And I will say that one of the reasons why I was trepidatious about Quantum of Solace anyway, because even though it pulled from an Ian Fleming title,
mm-hmm.
it had nothing at all to do with the story.
So for every single Bond film, there is a correlating novel.
Skyfall does not.
So Skyfall
does not.
So one quick reference for that for anybody who would watch the movies is when the opening credits, they would say, for instance, Sean Connery as James Bond 007 in Ian Fleming's Goldfinger.
Okay.
Whereas if it was not an Ian Fleming piece or Ian Fleming novel, they would say, for instance, Pierce Brosnan as Ian Fleming's James Bond 007 in GoldenEye.
Wow. So just switching two words around and putting... Wow. Wow.
So, for example, GoldenEye wasn't an original Fleming piece, but it was GoldenEye was the name of Ian Fleming's holiday home in the Caribbean, and that's why they went with that name.
But when they said Quantum of Solace, like, really, what was the story? What was the story about? Oh, it was just like Bond sitting there talking about like trying to find a small moment of peace.
Correct.
That was the story about.
And then they turned it like,
we're gonna make Quantum like this secret evil organization. It's how I was like, you mean Spectre?
Yeah, I was going to say, having not even seen those two, I know that Spectre basically is the high, and I almost want to always say when people ask, what's the last one called? I go, Hydra. Oh, shit, wait, that's the Marvel movies. Like,
and Spectre came before Hydra, because Spectre was an Ian Fleming creation.
And it has the octopus as the sort of icon.
That's right.
From sort of like the quote-unquote real Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Because Royale deals a lot with the Soviet counter-espionage, death to spies, and everything else. And then they said, you know what, let's move away from that. Let's get more into, like, this sort of nebulous criminal organization that Bond goes up against.
Right. Yeah. And that was the origin of Spectre, exactly what Gomez said, that Ian Fleming wanted it to be an organization that uses the Russian, the Soviet intelligence agency SMERSH against the American CIA, against British MI6, etc. So all of these major intelligence agencies think it's the other country's intelligence agency, but in fact, it's this cabal, this thing that's playing all of them.
It's all, and the thing, ironically, they're all, and he even says this, Mr. White says to Bond, you know, if she wouldn't have killed herself, we would have gotten you too, and you know, you would have been very, very useful. Like, like they're all these like splinter rogue groups that are made up of people who are still parts of all these other organizations as well.
Including the guy who kills, or the one who Bond kills in the beginning, is M's bodyguard.
Yeah,
he is MI6, but he's a member of.
They're everywhere.
Yeah. And she even said, she goes, he worked for me for 8 years. He passed a lie detector test every year. He was vetted, triple vetted, and he still was part of this group. I mean, I love the idea. And maybe, you know, if we're going to...
Quantum still has nothing on Spectre.
Well, now that's the thing. So Quantum is supposed to be... I mean, obviously, we're supposed to think that Mr. White is Quantum, but really... Quantum is just even almost like a smaller version of Spectre. They're like an offshoot of Spectre.
They're not so much an offshoot. They're like the junior league version.
Are they trying to be their own? Oh, so they're like, they're kind of just trying to launch themselves. They're trying to get on their feet as far as shadow governments go. They're like, they're the America of shadow governments. They're the youngest ones.
They're like the Venezuela.
Yeah, they're the lieutenant colonel trying to plan the coup when the general usually is the one doing the actual work.
Yeah.
Planning the coup. Speaking of coups and Quantum of Solace and generals, that was one part of the storyline that I actually thought was not necessarily great, good, or bad, but it was reminiscent to me of some of the 80s storylines where these really rich money guys are in bed with governments just to take them over. So in Quantum, you know, Green is trying to work with the Bolivian general so he can have the water rights. In the end, he winds up screwing the Bolivian general as well.
Right. That was actually based on the Bolivian water wars.
That is, but absolutely okay. Right. But and I thought
the
that
scary
was
thing about I think that one of the scary things about that was that in Quantum Solace, the bad guys are actually toned down the evil.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because there were no indigenous people killed and flooded.
Yes,
absolutely.
They didn't check the water.
In the actual water wars, not just
go ahead. High water in their own country.
Absolutely, and they starved people to death. The indigenous people were killed and murdered. They flooded literally flooded their lands with the dams and
wow.
They're like, we've got the guy. Great idea for bad guys.
Let's just make a universal evil businessman with a junta style dictator. Everyone hates that.
Yeah.
We don't need to go into the indigenous deaths.
Yeah, and I mean, that one thing I did find like. And again, knowing that he had to write it in a day to get it in for the deadline, the storyline of the one woman that he doesn't sleep with, whose name it's like I didn't even bother to learn characters.
The Canadian woman at the end?
No, the girl who is trying to kill the general for revenge. I mean, is that what her name is? Camille?
Yeah,
Olga Kurylenko.
Ukrainian playing a Bolivian.
Yeah, right. I was going to say
the main female lead in this one.
Who, I mean, I guess they had to make a big deal out of the fact that they don't sleep together, you know, that it's like a very platonic thing, and that's the only reason she lives. Literally, it's the only fucking reason. She kills the guy, she kills the general, who, like, how did you get to be a general? I guess we gotta assume a certain level of less sophistication of their structure of hierarchy. It's just like you could be a brute, like, yep, you're the general, fuck it. No one wants to deal with you, you're the general. Because his whole MO is anytime he's on screen, he's like, are we setting up my rape? Is my rape ready to go? Like, my rape for 5 o'clock, good, because otherwise I'm out of this deal. Fuck you and get out of my country. You're just like, holy shit, dude. How do you have time to run your army when all you're doing is running around raping women? And, like, to the point where, like, that chick who comes to bring the beer at the end, it's just like, holy shit, dude. You can't even be around a chick without... Wow. All right.
It's like, okay, we get it. You're evil. Thank you.
For fuck's sake, man.
What I will say about this one, though, because I think as we can all agree, certainly if the listeners didn't believe us, they believe us now. We all agree this one is not one of the best.
Yeah, but we haven't really highlighted the good parts. We'll say that.
Some of the very sort of typical or stereotypical, but I'd like to think typical, quote-unquote, Bond things that are present in this one, though, Bond in the very beginning with the car chase scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other one, as a character, something typical about the character is when Bond sleeps with the British Foreign Service consular woman.
Strawberry Fields.
Strawberry Fields, who tries to get him to leave, but instead he just checks into a beautiful hotel and...
instantly seduces her. Like, it's just like...
And she says to him, no, your cover is a teacher. We can't stay here. And he says, we're teachers who just won the lottery.
That was amazing. Well, the whole thing about, like, you could tell she had on, and I mean, how did we make it a half hour talking without bringing up Strawberry Fields yet? I mean, because that's the thing. As I was rewatching this, I was going like, all right, why did I think this sucked again? Like, there are these moments where I'm going, all right, this is pretty cool. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, this is why this one.
I mean, even the way that her death is presented, it's a shout out to
Goldeneye. Goldfinger,
absolutely, with the drowning in gold versus... Yeah. This one drowning in oil and that one suffocating by being covered in gold.
Yeah, skin suffocation. I always suffocate my women.
Emma Masters was, I think, in Goldfinger.
You don't skin suffocate your women, too, when you're done with them? I always skin suffocate. That's a big thing where I'm coming from. But he, like, you could tell that she had this air of, like, they probably told her, like, all right, look, you're going to get James Bond, all right? This is the deal. Just act like you're the boss. Just be the fucking boss, okay?
You tell Jill Masterson.
You tell him what's up.
Jill Masterson, not Emma. Yes, good call.
You tell him what's up, not the other way around, okay?
And of course, Goldfinger also had the classic Bond girl, Pussy Galore.
Pussy Galore at the end.
Played by Honor Blackman.
She was the pilot and, yes, exactly.
Jeez.
And also, of course, also had Harold Sakata as Oddjob.
As Oddjob,
the other huge
throwing the hat scene and getting rid of the statue.
Anyway,
another bit of great Bond trivia, since we're just going to go down holes and holes of rabbits,
talking about Strawberry Fields, we're going down holes.
Exactly. Good. I set up Dave for that.
How could you not? Gemma Atherton, or Arterton, however you say her last name.
Gemma Atherton, yes.
Just
a stunner. My
Jesus. What else has she been in? She's been in a lot
of
stuff.
You know, it's funny. I was actually thinking when I was going to do research for this movie, I was actually going to look that up and see what else she had been in.
She was in Clash of the Titans.
Pirate Radio.
Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters.
Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time. I'm looking for something good or something that I might have seen. I'm like, what the fuck? How is it this?
So all we've learned from this is that in real life she slept with Daniel Craig and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Say Pirate Radio is a fun movie to watch.
I do want to watch it. I've heard good things.
I would definitely recommend that one.
It's not as fun as Drowning in Oil, apparently, but it's definitely got, you know, it's...
Hey, a job's a job, you know.
Yeah.
I don't...
Because M even says something to him later, like, why her? She was just an office worker. She was collecting reports. Like, she's like, can't you just not fuck something, please, once?
and the thing about her, and I felt bad for her, too, after that. Audience did, because... she introduced herself to Bond. She's a consular officer in the British Foreign Service, which consular officer is the, when you join any country's foreign service, that's like the first level of, you know, and here shows up Bond. He doesn't listen to her about which hotel they should go to, goes to a different hotel, sleeps with her, and then gets her killed.
And she even says, I'm angry with myself over this. He goes, yeah, I'm sure you are. You know, which, it's just,
you know, and that's basically... Despite how terrible it is, to me that was just a classic James Bond thing. Which like, I'm here for a job, and apparently so were you.
Yeah.
I
remember that was like one of the first. That was one of the first times I even broached adult subjects with my parents, because I was like, because they let me watch James Bond. I'm going, so he like sleeps with a woman, at least one woman every movie, and then it was just like, well, maybe he can't watch James Bond. I'm like, fuck you guys, come on.
So this raised that question. not Barbarella.
No, I know, right? See? It's, I guess, because I showed comprehension when I watched this. With Barbarella, it was just like, I don't know why I like this, but I like it. You know, with this, it was like, he's getting all these people killed by sleeping. He's an STD. James Bond is a sexually transmitted disease.
If you really the demon from It Follows.
If you slept with James Bond, you are going to die within the next 24 to 48 hours, probably.
The very end of the movie, in which case you got a shot at living.
And that's
the next movie, but you have a shot at living.
It's like M is the only one who's safe.
And in fact, they're in it's one of the Pierce Brosnan ones, and maybe, I don't think it's Casino Royale, but one of the Pierce Brosnan ones, M basically says to him, says to Pierce Brosnan's James Bond, "You're a blunt instrument. You're a relic of a bygone era."
Oh, I remember that. Which one? Was that GoldenEye?
I think it might have been GoldenEye.
Because that was her first one as M, too. Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
Wow.
Yep.
I love it.
But yeah, so that's why some of the stuff, you know, there is likable stuff in Quantum of Solace. But I think the great point that I'll be honest, I didn't think about right now, so shout out to Gomez for making me realize that, is Spectre is the real evil organization, and Quantum is nothing. You know, they're like this wannabe evil organization, but why do that when Ian Fleming has created Spectre for you? Didn't need this. And Quantum of Solace, the title, is part of a short story that Ian Fleming wrote for Your Eyes Only, which they made into a Bond movie.
Way earlier.
But this was a short story, but as Gomez rightly pointed out, it had nothing to do with the movie sort of version. It was just about Bond regretting being alone, talking, and trying to come to terms with the fact that he is Bond and will be alone.
And I think the best thing that could have come out of that then is the opportunity to be like, hey, why don't we do a bunch of Bond movies that are connected? So like, we not only have him still caring about Vespa and carrying that baggage into this movie, we see that driving him to be this sort of like, I will sleep with anybody I want because they're around, and I purposely am now never going to get close to anybody again. Even though he was still upset, like he felt bad for Fields too. Like he came back in and was like, make sure you write that she was brave in your report. Like, you know, like, I didn't just fuck this chick thinking she was going to get killed. I don't do this on purpose. You know what I mean?
It just happened.
It's because I'm too fucking good because you guys trained me. I mean, think about it. This whole movie is about a spy getting yelled at for killing people while on missions, when to attain that level, to attain that title, there's a kill count requirement.
There's a kill count.
It's like, what the fucking fuck are you guys doing? It's not okay to kill, but you need to be able to kill in order to get the job. It's ridiculous.
It's a matter of discretion.
True. Absolutely.
Okay. It's being knowing that is it the right time to kill someone?
Sleeping with girls or the killing? Or both are matter. Oh, okay.
Both can be matters of.
But see, I don't think
as a trained spy, you should know when it is appropriate to keep it in your pants.
And I think they don't necessarily automatically assume that their two ideas are always tied together. It's only with James Bond that if some of them had slept together, all right, shit, we got to be careful. Someone's about to die. Everybody else, it's like, hey, did you go on that mission? Yeah, yeah. Did you save everybody? Sure. Did you sleep with anybody after I was done with the mission? Yes, I slept with people. All right, cool. Awesome. James, I was supposed to do the mission, but the first thing I did was sleep with the first chick I met who happened to be the chick I'm working with. They're like, oh, Jesus Christ. And everybody else is dead. The witnesses, the people I was supposed to, every contact I've made, they're all gone, but I have it all on tape. Here's the evidence.
I mean, basically, James Bond is a walking human resources violation.
Yeah.
That is perfectly put.
And all the things he's doing are not supposed to exist. You know, these are all missions that they disavow knowledge of anyway. So it's sort of like,
did you sleep with that chick? Which chick? That chick. Oh, the one that doesn't officially exist?
Does that mean we have to send a cleaning crew? What the fuck are you trying to say? Dude, just answer the question. Just answer the question, James. You like to speak in riddles, don't you, Em? No, I need the answer.
Left at the site. Well!
But I'll say, like, I liked seeing Felix Leiter again, you know? And I liked that they were continuing, they're having that their storylines, like, you know, by the end of this film, Felix Leiter is being promoted, so you know that now James has a high-powered friend in the CIA, so that when even when the CIA has this kill capture, he's still like, hey, James, you got to get the fuck out of here because they're going to kill you. Everybody in this room has a gun on you right now. Just go that way. You know, it's like, you're like, oh, okay, cool. This guy's awesome. And Felix Leiter, I feel like in the old movies, was never the same guy twice, right?
No,
like,
you're right. I thought you were going to say he was never this sort of menacing and you didn't know which way he was going to go because
right. In
the intro to Felix Leiter in this movie, in Quantum, the audience is meant to think, well, he might be not with James.
Right.
He's on that private jet and
with
all
David
this stuff.
Harbour. Stranger Things is David Harbour.
Exactly.
It's a question of where does the loyalty lie?
Right.
Is his loyalty to more to his government or more to his friend?
And it's never a question because, for instance, in the very first Bond movie that United Artists and MGM did with Broccoli Productions was the Sean Connery one. Christ, my memory. Sorry, guys. It's been a rough I haven't slept for like 3 days, so I think my memory's shot. But
wow, sorry, dude. Thanks for joining us on No Sleep. We appreciate you coming out.
My pleasure. In fact, maybe I am sleeping right
Dr.
now.
Dr. No.
I don't even. Dr. No, exactly. When Sean Connery goes to Jamaica and Dr. No and Felix Leiter shows up, in the very, very beginning of that, when Leiter shows up, you don't know who Leiter is or why he's there.
Right.
But then very quickly we figure out, okay, Leiter's with the CIA and everything's great. They're going to be friends. But in this one, along with Casino Royale, is the continuation of the actor and everything. You're absolutely right. We don't know.
Right.
The other thing, Dave, when you said about the same actor, this is the only actor Craig's Bonds are the only one where they've kept the same Felix Leiter.
Right.
In this one, Sean Connery's, they changed. Timothy Dalton's, mm-hmm. they actually killed Felix Leiter.
I was going to say, they were friends. That's what sets that whole movie, the last Timothy Dalton James Bond movie off, is we see Felix Leiter get eaten by a friggin' shark. Like, I remember when that came out, it was on, like, cable every day. When Living Daylights...
Oh, God, yes.
No, that wasn't Living Daylights. This was License to Kill. Hit cable... We watched that guy get blown up in that pressure chamber all over the money.
Oh, yeah.
And then the guy goes to Robert Davi, what about the money? And he goes, launder it. And you're just like, what the? I was like, Mom, how are they going to launder that money? She goes, that's not true. What he means. Just whatever. Just
and some classic 80s stuff in that movie, like Robert Davi, as you said.
Yeah.
Villain, you know, given everything.
He was every franchise.
Every franchise. You had... this guy,
Del Toro was
Del Toro.
Young Benicio Del Toro.
You had the actress who went on to play assistant district attorney on Law and Order, the Bond girl of sorts in this movie.
Oh, she had the short hair.
Short hair, yes.
Oh, what was her name?
In Law and Order, she's Jamie Ross, and it'll come to me.
Is what the Google machine's for in the back.
Exactly.
Right here.
But yeah, it was such a classic 80s thing. South America, cocaine, drug, you know, even...
And that was 1989.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Harry Lowell?
I think one of the things that I also appreciated about the Craig Bonds was that it was more of a stale beer spy fiction. Mm. Meaning that it's a little bit more... It's a much grayer... much more in terms of looking at. It's not rare. It's not as so much black and white anymore.
Exactly.
And if you're looking at the agents, it's not. They're not living necessarily the glamorous life per se. And there's definitely a psychological toll that's taking effect.
Well, we're definitely.
I actually put these James Bond movies in a slightly different category. It's stale beer in a martini glass.
Wow.
well said.
Because it's still, you have like the moral gray, you have the questionable ethical character of James Bond, but you're still in these sort of glamorous locales. You're in Bolivia.
They're taking on geopolitics, like you said, the water wars.
Yeah.
But they're taking on geopolitics, current geopolitics, versus some of the 80s one in particular. They weren't relevant to the times. They could be said it was a drug dealer or some guy trying to take over the world.
Or you're looking at like Moonraker, which is Moonraker. Very much martini glass.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Goldfinger, again, martini, which is going after like they've got this plan to take over the world and they're going to do this and that to do it. And sort of like these much bigger grander scopes.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
You almost get into like the super science aspect of it.
And even, right. I mean, like you had like, I think you had attempts to try to grasp more before the audience was ready, but because the audience wasn't ready, I mean, like, look at the one that we watched first, View to a Kill. It's like Christopher Walken's plan was to just destroy Silicon Valley to drive up the price of chips. Like, all right, that's right. The place they fucking make them, dude. Like, what? Yeah. Like, what are you doing? But it was at the same time, it was trying to have that martini glass atmosphere because
exactly.
we
yep.
get to this palatial estate where there's this giant horse show and right. all these rich people are there for a weekend getaway.
And he's got the exotic bodyguard and
yes
yeah exactly
that we
so.
See Jaws there's a lot of stuff going on.
I mean, this is what we're talking about with these movies. I almost put them aside the way that there's the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy. You know what I mean? Like, this is James Bond in the era of anti-hero, James Bond in the era of gritty realism. I mean, like, Casino Royale is basically James Bond Begins. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Absolutely.
Well, and I think the other thing that I appreciated, especially about these two, and I can't really say the same as much about Skyfall, and I haven't seen Spectre yet. But these two, also, I appreciate that it was focused much more on what the character was capable of.
Mm.
It had much less to do with the gadgets.
Oh, yeah. There's no gadgetry at all. I mean, the gadgets are there, but it's subtle. It's
no,
like
no, but not there. It's not, you know, Q at the beginning going, and here's this pen that will explode, or the
right.
credit card.
It's,
and,
it's,
like,
they don't go out of their way to point it out to you, but when M and all of her people are talking about, hey, so we traced this money that we had placed into Lashif's money laundering scheme, and it's like he just touches a table and the whole thing like lights up and all the dollar bill scans are showing up and he's just moving information. He's grabbing a scan and throwing it from the table to a wall and the wall becomes a touch screen. I think it's that. It's the idea that like, hey, they're massive dynamic. You know what I mean? They've got like all the high tech. That's their Area 51, but it's in a friggin' office building in the middle of like London, you know what I mean?
And actually, wow, Dave, that's a great point. You hit the nail on the head because, as Gomez said, with the later movies, later Craig movies, the gadgets that we think of with Bond historically do come into play a little bit. But even there, the new Q, everybody, they're in their own world, just like what you said here. They're in their own world with their technology, but Bond is in his old world using his guts and his brain and his street smarts and his gun and his other members of his body.
Yeah.
You know, so that they're doing that, and you know, that's a great point. I would also add that another saving grace of this, maybe in a larger sense as a movie, you know, I have a feeling at the end of this we might say this is the best movie, considering how we're going about it. But
I don't think we'll get that far. But I will give you that we'll come around to saying it's a decent movie.
One of the other saving graces of this movie, apart from what you and I think is the story continuity and some of, you know, Bond with his sort of Bond type instincts. The other thing, as you guys pointed out in here, is Bond just being gritty.
Mm.
He's bare naked. Because he doesn't have the gadgets.
Well, naked as Casino Royale.
He's not as naked as Casino Royale.
But he has all the scars from Casino Royale. We see those.
He doesn't have the gadgets.
Continuity.
He doesn't have the gadgets. He doesn't have M's or MI6's full support and confidence. Mm. It's just him. And the character study of James Bond, Daniel Craig's James Bond, I think is one of the best, maybe the best part of this movie on a sort of macro level.
Yeah. And I think they tried to go with so the first one is the Bond Begins. This one is the Bond Rogue because he's fallen out of favor. He's made his first major mistake, and she obviously was forced to suspend him. You know, I mean, like, there's that whole sequence where she's like, give them your weapons and exit the building with these guys, and as soon as they get in the elevator, you know he's gonna beat the shit out of all four of those guys and comes right back up to her floor and still talks to her. But it's like, okay, so this was the one where he's rogue, and then the next one is gonna be one where, oh shit, there's someone who's just as good as James Bond out there, and he's coming after us. And so it's like you have these phases of this iconic character that are being encapsulated in single film installments. And I think that's why it really didn't even occur to me until we were talking about it that I'm like, this is the Nolan trilogy of the Batman, of the Bond franchise. That's why they had to dip a chicken oil. They had to throw the nod to Goldfinger, because we're not going to have Goldfinger in this iteration. By the time we hit Spectre, it very well could be the end, unless they wanted to continue it, right?
Like, well, Skyfall, just to jump ahead a little bit, Skyfall is very much the Empire Strikes Back, though. Of this
It's probably the best one, absolutely.
Well, no, but more than just that, it's the one where Bond utterly fails.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And, and so that's the driving force to go then into Spectre.
Because if you look at everything that he sets out to do, Bond does not succeed at anything he attempts to do during
Skyfall.
And
in fact, and he loses everything. When he thinks he succeeds is the pinnacle of his failure, because that's what the movie, that's where that plot twist happens.
Think I know what that part is. I think I've read some stuff, because I know after Quantum, I was sort of like, I don't really give a shit. I know everyone's saying Skyfall is amazing, but I was so turned off after Quantum.
But see, here's the thing about Skyfall that you will love.
Is much, much better.
The writing is better. The plot, the movie as, you know, forget the writing or the plot or the acting, not that one can, but the movie just flows better. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. When I saw Quantum Solace, I was in the theater, and I didn't mention this earlier, but it was the girl that dumped Dave. She she was like, you know what, maybe it was just the date and not the movie.
She did say she was in love with an asshole. I don't know.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem makes it a fantastic bad guy.
Well, that's the thing, too, with these movies. Exactly. Yeah.
And in Quantum of Solace, like maybe 60-70% into the movie, when they're sort of in the desert at the oil mining area,
when they find the Fremen of water holding the water vaults.
all I kept thinking was that I hated. I remember I felt guilty even thinking it, because I love Bond, and I was like, when is this movie going to be over?
Seriously, like, when? Whereas this is such bullshit. Skyfall, I want out. I don't even want to see anymore.
Whereas in Skyfall, when I knew we were about 35, 40 minutes from the end, potentially, we were leading up to something major, the real climax, and the movie was going to end shortly. I was like, oh no, I don't want this to end.
Oh shit, wow.
And again, it's the acting, directing, Javier Bardem, as Gomez said, being not just a bad guy, but a bad guy like we haven't seen probably in Bond movies or mainstream
not for
villain
very
culture.
Long time.
So, we're talking again to keep the analogy going with the Nolans. This is the Heath Ledger Joker of the James Bond franchise.
That. Yeah,
because that I got to tell you, one of the great, for me, what's fun about doing these podcasts always is especially if talking to people who are like around my same age, and we definitely have these moments that we all know we grew up with these movies in our histories, having these things that were like, holy crap, you know, I always had this one idea about what was happening there, and now that we're talking about it, I will never see it that way again. And it's like, when this series started, when the Daniel Craig series started, I was like, I know, this past holiday season, Casino Royale was on every single day. I literally saw that movie 40 times in the month of December. So even if I kind of liked it, it just became like, I could watch this anytime
now. You almost became numb to it, though, after a certain point.
And that's the thing. That wasn't happening, and it still hasn't happened, because as I've been doing some post-holiday shopping, Target had an amazing sale on Blu-ray of all these James Bond movies. So I was just like, okay, Casino Royale, $5 on Blu-ray. All right, you know what? Let me get Quantum of Solace, too. Oh, let me give this another shot. Fucking Skyfall. Everybody's saying it's awesome. $5. How could you go wrong? And that's when I'm like, we're doing the Bond binge. We're doing a Bond binge for the podcast.
There you go.
And
so basically, your loyal listeners and college friends like me who, if we're lucky, can maybe even come on again. Basically, we're just dependent on what Target has on sale that week, and what Dave feels like buying is what we're going to talk about.
Well, sometimes Providence works that way. Sometimes Providence works that way.
That's okay.
But
final thing about Skyfall, Dave, and for all the listeners who maybe haven't seen it, is, and Gomez, jump in here about what you think, but it's that acting. Javier Bardem is the fantastic bad guy, but for me, it was Sam Mendes' direction.
Mm.
And you see Sam Mendes' sensibility in that movie. There's a couple of iconic scenes where you see something And the way Sam Mendes directs that scene or that prop in that scene to sort of do whatever it's going to do, I don't want to give anything away. Mm-hmm. Not only does it set up what happened in the past Bond movies beautifully, and it's an homage to the past Bonds and the past Bond movies, but you're like, wow, that was beautiful. Like, that just makes sense. And so, you know, all the more reason Quantum of Solace doesn't measure up, because its predecessors and its successors, you know, were fantastic.
It sticks out like the odd duck.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, I hate to point fingers at particular people, but I gotta say, I didn't have the same feeling about, you know, Mathieu Amalric as Dominic Green as a villain as I did about Mads Mikkelsen as Le Chiffre. You know what I mean? It was just like, holy, Le Chiffre was like, you're stunned. You know what I mean? There's a certain thing about him that is arresting. And this guy had more of the weaselly bad guy thing going on.
Definitely.
But one of the things that, again, watching it to get ready for the podcast, when he comes after James at the end with the fucking axe and he's swinging a pipe at him, I was like, dude, this guy could kind of fight. Like, James is in danger right now. You know what I mean?
You hit anybody with a fire axe and you start to get worried.
And you never thought that about Le Chiffre. Le Chiffre was this, you know, with the inhaler at the poker table or sort of baccarat table, and they're doing all this. But Le Chiffre was the guy who you're like, I don't want to cross that guy because with one snap of his finger, he can have 10 people after me.
Yeah, right.
But he can't fight.
Kills me, yeah. But he's going to get the guy to he's going to kill me.
Yeah. Right.
And that's actually, and in Casino Royale, again, one of the other better things was Vesper and Bond sort of showering in there, or, you know, getting Vesper sees Bond get in that fight in the hotel, and
in
then
the stairwell,
they
yeah.
comfort each other in the shower, and nothing happened. You don't see anything.
Non-technical way.
Yes.
It stayed that way for a while. It wasn't until they nearly died together and his nuts were almost crushed off that she's like, I'll play with these for a minute.
Just to help you out.
I love the fact that was actually in the original Ian Fleming story.
That his nuts almost gets emasculated.
He's basically strapped to the chair and was tortured that way.
Oh, right. I don't even know what is the name for that weapon that Le Chiffre is using in that.
It was a knotted bit of rope, man.
That's all it is. It's just a knotted bit of rope.
It's a heavy hemp rope.
Well,
tied in knots. And let me tell you, that's pretty much. I mean, really, do you need much more than that?
If we've learned anything the past few weeks, Steve Bannon definitely has a name for that weapon.
Donald Trump. Shit. Well, they may be making a Bond movie about this 10 years from now. Who knows? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
there could be a whole bunch of James Bonds out there keeping us all alive in the midst of this craziness that our political landscape has become.
You saw how Indiana Jones went about punching Nazis.
Mm-hmm. True.
So if there's ever a question, is it okay to punch a Nazi or not? Exhibit A. Indiana Jones.
Yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
There were moments
by the
in
way,
this
Dave,
movie.
Dave, I don't know if you guys have done this already, but speaking of which, talk about a great topic for a podcast. I mean, not just punching Nazis, but Indiana Jones.
Yeah, yeah. Like doing the idea of doing series like this. We toyed with actually structuring and planning the movies that we're going to do and like putting together a schedule ahead of time. And sometimes we'll stick to it for like a month, but it just seemed it became like a little bit more free-for-all-ish as the year went on. And this is probably the most strict I'm being so far, because I was like, we're doing the Bond binge. It's starting this week. Who can make it? Whoever can make it, you're on. Who can't make it, you'll be on the next one.
And a bit of it was as well. It's like, oh, we're going to be covering classic movies that, you know, you might think are bad. And then it became like, no, we're just going to do movies that we like to talk about.
Yeah, we're just going to do whatever we feel like watching. What did we watch recently? So we wound up doing, you know, Fury Road. But I think I definitely wanted an excuse to make myself watch Skyfall and Spectre, especially when I'm buying them. And my growing I guess love through Stockholm syndrome of Casino Royale. I was like, you know what? I owe it to myself to finish watching these. And then doing the episode before this with Jonathan, who's another one of our podcasters, having never seen Casino Royale, his response, like, to the whole idea that, like, are all the Daniel Craigs like this? And I'm like, from what I understand, yes, you just got to get through the next one first. And then I said,
fair enough.
Like, you know, all right, so you had Mads Mikkelsen in this one. Just to show you how much the next one sucks, I don't even remember who the fucking guy is the bad guy in the next one. But then after that, you got Javier Bardem coming up. And then after that, Christoph Waltz, man. Yes. And his face, as I mentioned each name, he's just like, and I'm like, yeah, dude, yeah. And so this is the next 3 weeks. We're just watching all of them, you know. And this has been the most disciplined, or at least strict, I'm staying to, like, all right, dude, we did Quantum this week. Next week is friggin' Skyfall. And there's, like, all these people who couldn't make it this week are like, we won on the next one. I'm like, you only got two left. You know, you got to do it. So Indiana Jones definitely on the table for an idea of doing, like, a whole series. It would be the only way I ever wind up watching Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, that I was gonna say, like, as a lot of people that you know, and I'm sure they say, but the guys on Big Bang Theory, on the comedy on CBS, often say there's no need to watch Star Wars, you know, Episode One.
I mean, right.
We don't have to, we don't have to.
You just kind of watch the last half hour of Episode Three, then watch the original trilogy.
Exactly.
Well, I have a 7-year-old son, and I keep pretending that the first three quote unquote episodes 1, 2, and 3 don't exist.
I still call it the new trilogy, and I refuse.
Yeah.
This does not exist.
And it's funny, because Jonathan was talking about this last week as well. It's ironic how, like, you can't talk about James Bond without talking about Star Wars. And his son, it's the opposite. Like, his sons love the 1, 2, and 3. And he's like, you know, they can't help it. It's a kid's movie. What are you going to do? And I'm like, not fucking show it to them. That's what you're going to do. You got to control that information.
You're prepared, man.
Control the information, dude. Do what you got to fucking
frame the
narrative.
You can see it after you're 10.
Yeah, there you go.
I feel like you will start to hate Jar Jar Binks.
I need you to understand.
I think you guys are right. I mean, I'm not a parent that I know of, so I hope I don't know how I'd handle it, but with my friends certainly, or people who ask me, who want to get into something like Bond or something else that I know about more than them, I will tell them, okay, you do want to watch every single one, even the bad ones, even the terrible ones, just to be up to, just so you know what's going on. But
okay, in that case,
you have limited time, and therefore start with these that are the good ones.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, so it's the same thing.
What is your opinion of the original Casino Royale?
The Peter
David
Sellers
Niven Casino Royale.
David, that's what it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a parody, right?
It was a parody. Yeah. It's not. I mean, I personally am a David Niven fan. I think he was one of the greatest actors. But as a Bond movie, I never rated it simply because it was a parody, like Dave said, and, you know, it wasn't meant to be anything more than that. But as a parody of Bond, I can appreciate it. There was a time when I wasn't able to appreciate it, being, you know, a self-proclaimed Bond nerd. I was like, how dare they even try to do this to James Bond? But David Niven is phenomenal. And as a concept, some of the jokes definitely fall flat. They're too much on the nose, or they're too rapey, if that's
possible. It was a very late 60s movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, so, I know I was too young to handle the idea of, like, well, why would they make a James Bond movie that's not a James Bond movie? Like, I was a kid who grew up also watching Mel Brooks, so I totally understood parody. And what was weird about Casino Royale, the only reason I even wanted to see it, is because my mom had a cassette tape that was all the classic Bond themes, you know, and it was so the first one's obviously the James Bond theme, and all of a sudden, like, 3 or 4 cuts in, Casino Royale, and it was like, I don't know, as a little kid, I used to every once in a while like a fucking random show tune or two, you know what I mean? Like, there were these, and sometimes there was a tune that would, like, just be really, like, I didn't listen to any other kind of music that was like it. Go YouTube out there if you're listening, YouTube Casino Royale theme 1967, and it was just kind of like a really cool sort of, like, 60s, 70s party song, and when my mom was like, oh yeah, that one wasn't a real James Bond movie though, and I'm like, well, why is it on the cassette? tape then if it's not. I mean, like, and I was like, I gotta at least try and watch it. And I just couldn't, even from the get-go, I just couldn't even get on board. You know, I was young enough to understand that it should be James Bond if it's a James Bond movie, but too young to understand how the parody was working. And it just, I don't know if it was,
so flat for you.
The aesthetic of the 60s, other than Barbarella, because that was just nothing but naked chicks, was very hard for me to digest as a youngin. I was sort of like, I don't like the way this looks. So,
no, I think that's completely fair, because unless one is ready for it, it won't work. And that's why some of the Roger Moore ones, I think, worked, whereas I think most of the Roger Moore ones didn't work. Every one, maybe except one of the Sean Connery ones, didn't work. And that was also the unofficial non-MGM UA one. Talked about that earlier. Diamonds Are Forever.
I
think one has to take into account the time period and all that stuff. But but for the most part, I thought David Niven was great. I could go without watching the original Casino Royale. If I don't watch it again, I'll be okay.
So my other thing to ask was, and I have not read them yet, but wasn't sure if you were aware that Warren Ellis recently did a comics run on James Bond.
Really? Wow.
Called Varger. He did a whole take on basically his graphic novel version, but his take on the James Bond mythos.
Is it following what's in these films?
No.
So
it's I think it's following more along the Ian Fleming model.
Okay.
And it's much more his own original take on the mythos, which I think is a fair thing to do, because James Bond is constantly being reinvented.
Right. Well, like it's a personality.
Every decade.
It's an identity you inherit, right? So I think idea is that each Bond is supposed to be a little different than the Bond before them and the Bond after them. I mean, even when Mathis dies in Quantum of Solace and he's saying, like, wait with me, you know, stay here with me. And he goes, Mathis is your cover name, right? And he goes, yeah. He goes, it's not a very good one. You know, so, like, now that he's dead, there'll be a new Mathis. You know what I mean? Like, so that cover name will get passed on James Bond gets passed on. So
sure.
I think that's what I liked about the Bourne series was I felt like that was sort of like taking this idea of the Bond identity being something that's passed down and saying, well, what if one of the guys remembered who he really was underneath that or started to have splinter memories of who his original before they broke him down and erased his mind so that they could program this new, like, whereas Bond, it's like, here, you've inherited this. Congratulations.
It's a legacy character.
And they take it on. It's like Bourne in America. We're like, fuck that. We're not giving
you the
choice to do this. And the ironic thing is that Bond saves the world by disobeying orders and acting on his own. You know, I mean, when he finds that whole cabal meeting at that performance of Tosca, and eventually
in Austria, yeah.
And he just eventually goes, can I jump in here, guys? You guys need to do this better. You need to find a better place to meet. It's like, even that, they wound up getting pissed at him because they took someone else's word that he killed a bodyguard right after he left. It's like, at least in the first, in Casino Royale, they have footage of him shooting and causing that explosion at the embassy and taking out all these embassy guards. Here, they're going on, yeah, someone said Bond killed somebody. Fuck it. Right. All right, we gotta fucking suspend
him. No, and you're right. There's a certain formulaic sameness to some of them because, like you said, for example, breaking the rule, disobeying orders.
Yeah.
He gets to Austria through the help of MI6 and everything with the tickets and the phone and tracking the plane. But then when he's about to leave Austria, his credit card is canceled and M has revoked his credentials and his license and everything.
Yeah.
So, you're absolutely right. The other thing about the reinvention is, I think, and in the beginning, as a younger person, when I was first getting into Bond and really, really getting into it, I thought, you know, it's unfair that you change Ian Fleming storylines or you make up a whole new story like GoldenEye, for instance, that Ian Fleming didn't do. You can't call it Bond because Ian Fleming invented Bond. But then, as Gomez, as you just pointed out, that I think it's fair if somebody else, like with Varger, you know, they are reinventing the character. I actually agree with you, and I think that's fair because when you put your stuff out there for the public, whether it's books or movies, and you want it to be as successful as it is, you have to allow for a certain bit of reinvention over time.
Right.
And that's
although I think
I think different people have different views on that. I certainly didn't have this view about Bond and reinvention earlier in my life. It's something I've come around to. But I think it's required, because otherwise you do get staleness, you do get remake after remake rather than something new. And once in a while, like with Skyfall and Casino Royale, you get really good.
Yeah.
I mean, Casino Royale is not new. It is a remake.
No, but it totally, but the way they did it, the way making they did it a serious. Exactly. So yeah. Keeping that in mind to sort of bring us to a close on this one, because I feel like it's so funny. This is the episode where we've talked probably the least about the actual Bond it's about strictly because it's the one that was sort of the sleeper of the new series.
And
what
the
a
weakest,
polite and diplomatic
it was the weakest link.
Yeah, I mean, and it's that moment of peace that you take between the first one and then the third one in what should have just been a trilogy. And this one should just not exist. This one should be a web series. But
it's the Jar Jar of the Bond.
Right. When you think about, there was after Spectre was made and Daniel Craig supposedly retired the Bond and was not going to come back to do anymore, and then we're talking about how things get reinvented, there was a rumor at one point that Idris Elba was going to be in the running to take over the Bond title. What, in knowing all your Bond history and your familiarity with the franchise, who could you see taking on the role of Bond if Daniel Craig didn't want to come back? And would you want them to sort of not necessarily reboot, but depart from what they had done with this Daniel Craig series and sort of reboot again, almost in the same way DC is doing with the Batman after the Nolan series was over? Who could you picture as the new Bond, and do you want it to be sort of a new Bond, like another new era of Bond?
Right. I personally wouldn't mind if it was Idris Elba. People have talked about it, and only because the rumors are so strong for him, am I even thinking about it and considering, and I've maybe even convinced myself that he would be a good Bond. I do think he would be good. I think it would work. Unfortunately, the current world and climate we live in, it would depend on global marketability, particularly the East Asian market, and how they would respond to an African, well, I was going to say African American, but he's British, so to a black,
to a British,
to a black,
to a British black. But part of the question is, as well, is what does his schedule look like?
Exactly,
that he has going on.
But now that he's
he's got his music going on,
and he's also the gunslinger.
He's doing gunslinger. And he's got a bunch of other stuff.
Well, isn't he Luther? Isn't he on Luther?
He's Luther, yeah. That's right.
This is looking back at, this was back in 2006, early part of last year, but Tom Hardy, Michael Fassbender.
Oh, shit,
And Michael Fassbender has always been my personal front runner of the current new crop. There was a time when after Pierce Brosnan was done, before Daniel Craig was announced, they were talking about people like Ralph Fiennes, his brother Joseph even, and stuff like that. Which would have been okay then. I mean, I can't imagine anybody except Daniel Craig now, for sure. It was the best choice. But Ralph Fiennes, I think, is too old now to do Bond, really. And I think Michael Fassbender would be very good.
But they also mentioned things, people like Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Hiddleston, which might not be quite the same look that you might necessarily think of with the James Bond, but it would give a chance to make it a slightly more intellectual character.
Yeah.
And I think that's the question. What would not just sort of diehard fans like us maybe want to see in a Bond as a new character, as a new actor, but what the marketability bid would be? I don't know if Benedict Cumberbatch would have the marketability, be able to sell Bond, as it were. We could be wrong. He is a fantastic actor, for sure. I personally would be okay with
Doctor Strange did well.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with Idris Elba or Michael Fassbender. I think Tom Hiddleston's I actually think that's not a bad choice either.
Yeah.
Oscar Isaac as a possibility.
Oscar Isaac wouldn't be bad either. I'm thinking, what about the guy who's playing Daredevil on Netflix right now? Because Charlie Cox, he's actually British, and the physicality of the Daredevil role definitely has an awful lot of what the James Bond thing would be doing.
Yeah,
he's a little young.
Gives me like too almost, but he, his face is too boyish.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's a little on the young side. Yeah.
What about what do you guys? I haven't thought about it until right now. But what do you guys think about Henry Cavill, the Superman?
I wouldn't mind that. I mean, I
he's
like
almost
Henry
too
Cavill.
Like. Is he? Is it just me, or is he almost too like sort of statuesque?
Yeah,
you know, like,
his face is, looks like it was chiseled out of fucking marble. Yeah,
it might be something that's not a reinvention. So I think going back to Gomez's point, do we want a reinvention, and that the Bond diehards can accept, or do we want a traditional Bond that the global market can accept?
But the question is like, what is even the traditional Bond now?
Right.
Other than a straight white man.
I mean, I honestly.
I think those might be the only requirements apart from, like Pierce Brosnan, for instance, wasn't English or British. He was Irish, or he still is. He's not dead. He's Irish. George Lazenby was Irish. It was Australian. You know, he played one. Right. Mm-hmm. So there are guys who don't have to be British necessarily. Pierce Brosnan was definitely accepted as Bond, no problem.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think straight white guy, I think you're right. I don't know if we're living in that much of a changing world globally. And I'm emphasizing globally the markets such as the Middle East or East Asia, which are, you know, the studio has to look at. They are such big money makers, China and the rest of East Asia, for Bond films. That they would really have, like you saw what China did with Star Wars poster, you know.
Yes.
So it's things like that that I think the studio has to consider with people like Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Even though I personally, more and more I think about Idris Elba playing Bond, I think it would be an absolutely perfect direction.
Yeah,
I think that we're more likely to see a black Doctor Who than a black Bond at this point.
Yeah, and it's funny because like other than the Bourne films, anytime they've tried to do a James Bond clone, as I'll call it, I mean, Jack Reacher, I refuse to watch, you know what I mean? And like even the Mission Impossible movies have gotten boring to me.
How about Triple X now that they've
God, that they could have just let that die on the vine, you know what I mean? Just leave that in the past. We all have mistakes that we just leave in the past. And Triple X,
I enjoyed the first one just because it made fun of Bond.
Well, that's the whole thing, and just leave it at that. Leave it at Samuel Jackson and Vin Diesel and another female. De Laurentiis's I forget what the name of the female lead from the first Triple X movie was, but yeah, leave it alone. Just it was a thing you did, that was fun. It just shows what we try to do when we Americanize something like James Bond. You know, I mean, it's just like, just leave it alone. Maybe we have to make Daniel Craig come back, because I'm trying to think of who I would want to put in there. Asia Argento, and I'm going De Laurentiis.
Well, I would say, actually, there's on the complete opposite, but yet the same theme. One person whose name was thrown around, who I personally would not like to see as Bond, is Colin Firth.
Oh, well, he.
Even though I like Colin Firth as an actor, I think he's phenomenal, whether it was The King's Speech or League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and stuff like that. I love it. I just don't think that's what we want Bond to be now.
No, well, we have to get a Tom Hardy in there.
Yeah, Tom Hardy would be awesome.
Like what's the movie Tom Hardy just did last year when he played the British twins? The gangsters.
What's it called? It's called.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Another movie that has the same title, and I always think it's that movie, and I turn it on, and I'm like, oh, this is the twin thing. Shit, I got to watch this
movie. Amazing movie, and his acting in it is superb. He's actually English. He can play rough and tumble, south side of London English. He can play the aristocratic Bond-type English. So, I think Tom Hardy, Michael Fassbender, as far as straight white guys, and if we want to flip it, I would go Idris Elba. But yeah. Anybody that you guys would not like to see.
Yeah.
Legend was the one.
Good call, yeah.
He was also in Kingsman, which I felt like he got to be his James Bond in that. Is, you know, he got to do his James Bond thing.
Absolutely,
there.
That was his James Bond, you're right. Anybody you guys would not want to see? That's a possibility?
Oh, man.
They're floating Charlie Hunnam around from Sons of Anarchy. That's a possibility, which I can kind of see, but... Part of me would be like, I would just not be able to see him other than being the California biker. And that would be a hard sell for me at this
point. But that's the whole thing. I'm trying to think of who would shock us the way Heath Ledger shocked us with the Joker. You know what I mean? Like, there was so much backlash to these.
I got you. Tilda Swinton.
I was gonna say a chick actually would not be a bad idea, and she would probably be the only like female that could transition us over to having a female Bond type character. You know, I mean, I think that would actually be pretty amazing. I almost want to say let's bang the gavel on that and let's go Tilda for Bond. Hashtag Tilda for Bond.
007 Tilda. Hashtag 007.
There you go. All right. Well, Ahmed, thank you so much for joining us tonight on What Am I Watching?
Really appreciate it. And great show. Thanks for having me on.
And yeah, definitely got to come back sometime. Do you have any web presence or anything you want to plug? Anything you want to tell our listeners about to check out for?
Nothing exceptional. You know, the standard Instagram and Facebook stuff. Do a search for Ahmed Z Khan and you'll see. Keep an eye out. I'll be writing on a different note some more stuff about the current political, diplomatic, State Department stuff. Keep an eye out for that in the local press.
Awesome. Awesome. Gomez, I know you had some publications recently.
So a couple things out in New Realm magazine, Altered States 2 Cyberpunk Anthology, which came out back in December. Hard copy of that just came out last week. And laying groundwork for putting out my own magazine.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
A conspirator of mine focusing on pulp fiction from the 30s and 40s. Not republishing that necessarily, but looking for stories in that vein.
Nice.
So we're going to be looking to hopefully have our first issue out in June. We've got kind of a whole shitload of work to do before we get there.
Interesting you mentioned Pulp Fiction. There's been some writing and creative endeavors going on behind the scenes here at Hollow Nine that might have some sort of radio-styled Pulp Fiction coming out soon. So keep an eye out there on our mega feed where everything comes out. And all the usual stuff that you'll hear in the business coming up after the theme music here. So we are continuing on with the Bond binge. This has been part two. We're now halfway through New Bond. Moving on next time to Skyfall. So listen, if you're a completist like us, just take the bullet, watch Quantum of Solace. There's some hot chicks in it. Strawberry Fields, you will fucking, like, that, I swear to God, when she appeared and I'm rewatching, I'm going, oh, fuck, how did I forget about her? Like, literally a reason to watch the movie is Strawberry Fields. So for all the guys and a lot of girls out there, I'm sure too.
Like the redhead,
it'll open your eyes. We'll put it this way. They don't call her Strawberry Fields in the movie. She just introduces herself as Fields and says, Fields. Face
it. If your parents were big enough hippies to name you Strawberry Fields, would you kill anybody your first name?
Well, it also sounds like a typical Bond girl name, right? Like Pussy Galore, Strawberry Fields. We're toning it down this time around.
We're going to try to, at least.
We're not literally having people curse to say a character's name. All right. Well, keep your ears here for Skyfall coming out next week. Until then, I'm Dave the Clone, and it has been fun to say, what am I watching? You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at Hollow9Podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, Hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, FangirlZone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.